Welcome to the Wide Right Podcast. I am your host on this chaos train of Canes football, Carlos Ledo. Yes, I'm back. Back on my own show for the first time in a while since before the bowl game. And I'm sorry I've been absent for so long. Had a lot of stuff going on. Would only make time for Manny's podcast since he gets to drive the show there, ask me questions, and I just get to give opinions and not have to do any research or anything. Or actually sound like I know what I'm talking about. And most of you point that out. Thank you. Thank you for letting me know. Anyway, this past week on Wide Right, Manny and I were discussing the transfer of Rhys Poffenbarger from Albany, the Great Danes, to Miami, where there's some Great Dames. Haha. Anyway, so Manny asked me if I had watched film on him. I had not. I broke down some of his PFF numbers. I mentioned that to me is the most concerning stats were his completion percentage and the fact that, he was a great deep ball thrower. It looked like he had a really good deep ball percentage. But his accuracy in that middle range, that 10 to 19 yard range, was not great. And his completion percentage overall was not great. And then I basically, and Manny agreed, said that I thought this guy was just another body, another guy to throw in there to compete with Emery Williams and Ja'Cari Brown. To add another arm to the roster in case Emery's not ready for game one. You know, maybe Poffenbarger can spot start at the beginning of the season and give way to Emery or even Ja'Cari if Ja'Cari stays around and wins the job behind Poffenbarger or beats Poffenbarger, who knows. So to me, he wasn't the guy or the long-term plan. To me, he was like a break glass in case of emergency veteran quarterback. Now, I did not comment on his mechanics. I did not comment on his ability to read defenses. I didn't comment on anything that would have required me to watch film to develop my analysis. Yet, I got a lot of people, both on Twitter and YouTube, commenting, how can you have an opinion on somebody you haven't even watched the film? Okay. The numbers that I gave you were an analysis of basically his performance, right? And I was commenting on those numbers. I wasn't commenting on him overall. I was commenting on what those numbers tell me. Because generally, you know, as the saying goes, numbers don't lie, and I can see the trend. So, thanks to, some encouragement, some guys trying to act smart and make me, or try to make me seem like I don't know what I'm talking about. Mind you, some of these guys are guys that have relied upon my opinion for a long time, have praised me for it. Even thank me for my insight game to game when I do the game breakdowns because I'm so accurate. But hey, now again, you know, like it is with all fan bases and all fans and all people, especially in this internet age, you know, the tide swings quickly. You go from hero to zero in one episode. You go from hero to zero, from a guy who knows what he's talking about to an idiot in one quick swing of the pendulum. And to be honest, it's expected. I'm not bothered by it. I find it funny. But yeah, here I am. I was forced to watch Rhys Poffenbarger, actual film. I was not planning on doing it this week so early. I was planning on doing it maybe next week. But hey, here we are. I watched him versus Hawaii. And I watched him versus Marshall. Let's start with the positives. Okay? So, I will give you a spoiler alert. What I said after looking at his numbers, I was correct. But anyway, that was just confirmed by the film. I'm going to give you a little comparison based on the breakdown that I did of the other quarterbacks and compare him to some of the other guys that I broke down earlier a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, with Manny when we had Cam Wardapalooza, trying to bring Cam Ward down here, giving him the Johnny B. Good treatment, like he was Anthony Michael Hall, trying to recruit him over here. So let's go through those numbers, okay? Rhys Poffenbarger, I already discussed this on Wide Right, I'm not going to mention it again, his completion percentage left a lot to be desired. So there's a statistic called adjusted completion percentage, which means, you know, it takes your actual completion percentage, but then adds on or gives you credit for passes that were thrown accurately and then were either dropped or something happened, mainly dropped. So it gives you credit for accurate passes that weren't caught. So Reese Poffenbarger, his adjusted completion percentage was 68.4% this past season. Is that good? I mean, it's not terrible. It's not great. I'll give you an example. Cam Ward's adjusted completion percentage was a 78.7. KJ Jefferson's was 72.5. Jordan McLeod was 75.9. Tyler Van Dyke was 75.2. He is, however, higher than DJ Uiagalelei at 66.9. So there's that. And he's behind Will Howard, who was at 69.7. So second to last amongst all the guys that I reviewed, his pass grade from PFF was high. It was solid. I believe he was third overall. He was only behind TVD and Jordan McLeod in terms of his pass grade. But again, you know, being that TVD had the season he had, you know, pass grade by PFF, really not a great measure. Big time throw percentage, you know, respectable 6.8. Tied for second best with DJ Uiagalelei and behind Tyler Van Dyke, who had a 6.9. Turnover worthy plays, 3% of those plays that he made were turnover worthy plays, which puts him, you know, smack towards the top of that. You know, DJ Uiagalelei had a 2.6. I would put him in number two at three. Average depth of target. This is influenced by the amount of deep balls that he throws, and I think that also impacts his completion percentage. He likes to go deep. At least he did in conference play. Is a 12.1, which would be the highest amongst all these guys, which, you know, means he likes to chuck it. And when you have a low completion percentage coupled with a high average depth of target, that means you are a gunslinger. You're a chucker. You're a Chuck Finley, Detroit Pistons. Or was that? No, Chuck Finley. That's Chuck Daly. Chuck Finley played for the Angels. Never mind. Random 80s brain. That's what you're dealing with today. His pressure to sack ratio was 23.6%. So that puts him just behind Cam Ward at 25, who had 25.1%. The worst amongst these guys was KJ Jefferson at 33.3%. So those were the three worst ones in terms of pressure to sack ratio of the guys that I measured. Time to throw was a 2.71. That is, you know, just behind Will Howard and Cam Ward, who were 2.79 and 2.76, respectively, and DJ Uiagalelei, who was at 2.97. For reference, Tyler Van Dyke had a 2.64 time to throw. His NFL QBR was 96.8, pretty solid. That puts him just behind DJ Uiagalelei, who had a 97.4, just ahead of KJ Jefferson, who had a 95.1. Cam Ward had 100.7. TVD had a 94.4. Jordan McLeod had a 114. Touchdown interceptions, you know, 31 and 13 this year. That puts him in that Jordan McLeod range. Jordan had a 32 and 9. And his run grade was a 69.4, which is just behind Cam Ward, 69.7. Other guys who had better run scores were, you know, Will Howard, DJ Uiagalelei, KJ Jefferson. Worst of all was Tyler Van Dyke. So those were the numbers. So based on the numbers, he fares okay, you know, compared to all these other guys. Again, consider the fact that he is an FCS quarterback. Based on the film, on what I saw against Hawaii and Marshall, to me, his greatest quality is his athleticism and his ability to make plays with his legs and his toughness. Because he took some big shots against Hawaii. He took some big shots against Marshall, especially, and just kept going, kept rolling. So he's a tough guy. And I've seen people say that he's a dog and he's a gamer. And I would agree with those sentiments. He is a tough guy. He's a dog. He's a gamer. He's a leader. One of the things I liked about him was at the beginning of the Marshall game, right before he took the first snap, he's hyping everybody up. He's clapping. He's slapping people on the back, telling his offense to let's go. Let's get it going right before the first snap of the game. To me, that's leadership qualities. Those are intangibles that you can't measure on PFF or any stat sheet. So that's great to see. Also, I think he does a good job in zone reads. He knows when to pull. He does a good job ball handling in terms of his fakes and pulling the ball, both on zone reads and run actions and pass play action, which they don't run a whole lot of. Albany didn't see a whole lot of that. It must be from the Shannon Dawson school of passing attacks. Anyway, to me, those are his best qualities. There's a lot of bad in terms of his passing ability to me. And I'll give you some reasons why I feel that way. Number one, let's start with his game against Marshall. He was 22 of 38. That's 57.9%. That's below average. One touchdown, no interceptions. Had a couple plays that could have been picked that didn't. I think that Marshall game was impacted a lot by the fact that he was under pressure a ton. However, a lot of those pressures, I would say 30% of those pressures, were his own fault. Either by holding on to the football too long or getting happy feet in the pocket and trying to scramble around rather than sliding and stepping up in the pocket and finding the open gaps in the rush lanes to throw the football and keeping his eyes downfield. To me, you know, and I saw the same thing against Hawaii, he has a tendency of getting happy feet in the pocket and focusing on the rush as opposed to feeling the rush and having a good sense of the pocket. He doesn't do a good job, to me, of having pocket presence and moving and sliding in the pocket as he should. To me, he automatically feels pressure, and his instinct is to start running around, which gets him in trouble. There was a play in particular, I believe it was against Marshall, where it was third and five at Marshall's eight, third and goal, sorry, from Marshall's 8-yard line. It was the end of the second quarter. There was like, you know, 15 seconds left or something like that. 20 seconds left, maybe. He takes a snap and immediately starts fading back and just continues to fade. And to me, it looked like somebody playing Tecmo Bowl back in the day when you would just back the quarterback up all the way into the end zone to make him throw the ball deeper and throw a Hail Mary, essentially, and throw a bomb. That's what it looked like. He just kept fading backwards. And he ended up losing like 15 yards on the play because he backed up so far. The rush eventually got to him. His offensive line did not anticipate having to pass protect 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So they sacked him, and it pushed him into field goal range. And didn't work out for Albany there. But it was a pretty bad decision. And he tends to do that a lot. He likes to fade a lot in the pocket. And when he's throwing the football, he'll fade sometimes. He does that every once in a while. It's very annoying. He doesn't do a good job of setting his feet on throws a lot of times, even when there's no pressure. When there's no pressure, he tends to have a couple of things when there's no pressure. Continuously fade back as he throws. Leave his back foot hanging in the air, which really reduces his balance as he's throwing the football and he's moving forward with the momentum of the ball. It reduces his his arm strength. It reduces the force with which he can throw and the depth with which he can throw, because with that back foot up in the air, he is slowing momentum. He is essentially forcing his body to a stop, and now he's having to contend with that force. And then that sort of reduces the ability to put more strength behind the ball. To me, another thing he doesn't do well is he doesn't bring his back hip into the throw and bring that back foot forward into the throw. Some guys coach it, you know, bringing the back foot forward. Other guys coach just twisting the hip into it and just pivoting the back foot. There's different ways to teach it, but essentially you want to get your lower body involved into the throw and not just be all arm. He tends to be all arm a lot of times because his lower body mechanics are off. That's something he needs to work off. He's not very good with his lower body mechanics. He's got happy feet. He doesn't really stand and throw and deliver in the pocket when he has no pressure. He's always sort of like off. I saw somebody say something about off-platform throws. Yeah, and I think a lot of his off-platform throws are forced off-platform throws that he puts upon himself when he could have easily made a on-platform throw and made life a lot easier on himself than having to, you know, do something crazy like that. I also think his arm angle can be a little low at times. It could be a little bit three-quartery instead of being over the top, which, you know, some guys, that's their style. But to me, for a guy that's about 6 feet tall, that's a little bit of a concern, especially going into, you know, Power Five with big-ass offensive linemen and big-ass defensive linemen. But, you know, that can be overcome. That's not that big of a deal. What it is a concern for me, though, is with that lower arm angle is you tend to float the ball and not be as accurate with it. It doesn't hurt him as much on deep throws, although I'll get to that in a second. His most inaccurate to me, and where that arm angle and the feet and the lower body and all that come into place, is when he's trying to drive the ball again, in that 10 to 19 foot range, 10 to 19 yard range, to the wide side of the field where he's got to put something on it. He puts something on it, but it's inaccurate as hell because he's just throwing all arm and he's throwing his head all over the place. And now the ball's not where it needs to be. I saw him throw, I think, between Hawaii and Marshall, 6-7 outs, deep outs, you know, and I'm talking not deep, 10 to 12 to maybe max 15 yards, probably not that deep, probably 10 to 12 yard outs to the wide side of the field. And he was 0 for 6 on those and wasn't even close. He's not good throwing the ball. Even deep balls to the wide side of the field, he struggles to throw those. So for him, he can throw vertically. He does a better job throwing vertically to the short side of the field. He throwing to the wide side of the field, he tends to get inaccurate again because I think he doesn't get his lower body involved and his mechanics are off. So he's got to go all arm with it. And it's easier to do that to the short side of the field because it's less field to cover with the throw. By all means, I don't think he's got a weak arm. I think he's got a decent arm. I think he's got a good arm. But to me, he would be much more effective and his arm strength would be enhanced if he was able to incorporate his lower body into the throw, be more balanced as he threw it, and really whip that hip into the passing, into the throw, and maybe get that arm angle a little bit up higher to avoid batted balls, to get the ball over the line of scrimmage, but also to be more accurate with it so he's not getting underneath the ball. What tends to happen sometimes when you're that three-quarter kind of guy or your lower arm angle is rather than having your wrist on top of the ball as you're throwing, your wrist tends to be underneath the ball, and then you're actually pushing it, and that tends to sail the ball and be less accurate. So your wrist is under the ball. You're pushing the ball more than throwing it. You have less control of the ball that way. I know because that's an issue I had as a freshman in high school, and they forced me to wear a bowling glove on my throwing hand to get that correct. There you go, little trivia. Anyway, so he was against Hawaii. He was bad. He was 10 of 31 against Hawaii, 93 yards, no touchdowns and a pick. He was wildly inaccurate in that game. He was, I believe, let's take a look. I think I wrote it down here. In the first half against Hawaii, he was 8 of 19. That means he was 2 of 12 in the second half against Hawaii. Okay? Not great, guys. And I mean, he's, I hate to say it, he reminds me of Tate Martell. I think he's a tougher, bigger version of Tate Martell with a little bit more athleticism, I would say. I think that's who he is. Can some of these things be corrected? I think the mechanics can be, but it's difficult with a guy this far along in his career, in college already, but they can be corrected. Now, is Shannon Dawson the guy to correct it? I don't know. But it would not surprise me if maybe he comes in, plays here during the spring, doesn't shake out, and maybe goes back to FCS, to another program. I don't know. The kid is talented. I will say that. He's athletic, tough, talented. The problem is when you're using adjectives like gamer, moxie, tough as nails, 1920s sort of adjectives for toughness and ability. For a quarterback, that doesn't speak, you haven't mentioned anything about his ability to throw, which is concerning. So, yeah, it's great to have a guy who's tough and a gamer and got the intangibles, got moxie, but he can't throw the ball. That's a problem, especially at this level, especially for the Miami Hurricanes, given where they're coming from with Tyler Van Dyke, the situation they're leading into with the potential of this team coming up into the season and the need for Mario Cristobal to continue to show improvement and scale the progress up quickly. I don't think this guy is going to be a legitimate starter here at the University of Miami. You know, he could spot start. He could be a situational guy, which I would love to see. You know, if Jakari Brown leaves, I think Poffenbarger would be an excellent situational guy who could beat you with his legs, but still have the ability and the threat to throw the football. So I think packages for him, I think that would be great. I think that's where in short spurts and packages, things are in his wheelhouse. To me, that would be a great advantage. I think he could be another weapon you could use in that mold. That to me would be the best use of his talents, is to use him in goal line, red zone, Open field stuff where you want to use quarterback run stuff. Use two quarterbacks, you know, bring him in, split out the starter, whoever that might be, out wide, and then he could either run or throw. You know, do some wildcat stuff with him, but still have the ability to throw the football. So to me, packaging him like that, especially if you're using a young quarterback like Emery Williams, or even, you know, Jakari has the ability to run, but I think dual quarterbacks that could do that, if Jakari is a starter and he sticks around, to me, that'd be greater. You know, who knows? Judd Anderson. I think that's where his best, he's best served. So there you go. There's my analysis. I watched the film and I've confirmed my own suspicions. So sorry, guys. Wish I had better news. But listen, I don't think it's over. You know, now with Nick Saban retiring, the dominoes will fall across college football. Now with Kalen DeBoer taking the job at Alabama, you know, that domino may fall as well. Will Rogers may have the out there. You know, Jalen Milroe may want to leave. Other guys may want to leave. You never know what's going to happen. So we'll see. There you have it, my friends. That is the MIA All Day podcast. I appreciate your patronage. For those of you that don't know, I am still selling MIA All Day t-shirts. We will be coming out with a basketball-inspired shirt soon. I'll be posting that on Twitter in a couple weeks, maybe sooner. But still have those professional football and college football-inspired shirts. Feel free to hit me up via Twitter at MIA Leather to show you some designs. I could also customize those on different types of shirts, whether it be performance shirts, long sleeves, short sleeves, hoodies, whatever you like. Hit me up. My wife is amazing. She does it all. So I can definitely guide you to the right products. All right, there you have it. Thank you guys for the support. Have a great long weekend. It is Friday here. It is about 4 o'clock. So my weekend is officially starting. Time to get some bourbon in me. Peace!